class and buying time, killing people next in line. Lower class and social slime, they don't matter. Genocide, sick from water, sick from air, making money, they don't care. Caesar shit, force of air, fuck them back, it's only for they bomb. They shoot, they kill, they massacre, they burn the kids. No one makes gun, trees, lie to your face. Social slide, they don't matter, genocide. Sick from water, sick from air, making money, they don't care. See the shit, force a bear, fuck them back, that's only fair. They bomb, they shoot, they kill, they massacre, rape, they burn the kids. No more leaves, gun, trees, lie to your face. Fight and die, cause God forgives. Yeah.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Ron Stevens. This is Rock the Boat right here on UCY.TV. I'm your host for the next hour. It's been kind of a crazy couple of days. Today's what, the 7th of March? It was a beautiful day today. It was really warm. I got up really early today. I don't usually get to bed until about 2 in the morning, so I tried to go to bed about midnight last night. And damn, if I didn't wake up around 5. So I get up and back to bed and get up about 5:45, I guess. Walked down town this morning to get a cup of coffee, and it was like 15 above. First thing this morning, it's cool. It's cooling down quick now, but it was a pretty warm day for this time of year, which is fine with me. And it's probably got Al Gore and David Suzuki all wet, you know, just going, ooh, it's warm, must be going warm, and it ain't, but that's beside the fact. Anyways, we were at the court yesterday in Waukegan, Ontario, and Michael Schmidt and two other gentlemen, John Schnurr and Robert, I forgot what Robert's last name is. Anyways, we're in court for a 5-day trial over the notorious raw milk. And SAGA, I guess, has been going on for 23 years. And they've been raiding Michael's farm and dragging around in courts and stealing his stuff and generally being an irritation, kind of like a tick or a flea on a dog's back. And so yesterday, the trial was supposed to start at 9:30. It didn't. They had some other matters to deal with, so it didn't get going till about, I don't know, must have been 10:30. Michael was very ill yesterday. I've never seen him look that bad. He was a very robust guy, and he had the flu bad or something. He was quite ill, and he kind of hung around there best he could. And the one gentleman dismissed his lawyer, and the judge was yelling at the lawyer, and then the judge was yelling at the Crown because John Schnurr had issues with his lawyer, and then the judge had issues with the lawyer, and the judge is going, well, we can't stop now because we're 17 months into this, and we only got 18 months to get it going, or it gets thrown out for not a speedy trial. Actually, have to have it done before 18 months, or in 18 months. And so the judge has got his panties all night. He's trying to push forward. Michael's sick as a dog. He says, is there a law against me throwing up on the table because I don't feel good? And then the judge says, we're going to push ahead anyways, whether you got a lawyer or not. Michael and Robert are self-represented. And then John says, well, yeah, but I don't have the tapes of the raid. And I've not got the disclosure. And then Robert pipes up and he says, I don't have the tapes or the disclosure either. And I've been trying to get it for 16 months. So this is clear that Michael and Robert and John are not holding up the trial. It is the Crown that's holding up the trial. And I guess everybody likes a paycheck, so drag it out. So eventually, Michael says, I'm not well. And he says, well, you'll be back here tomorrow unless there's a doctor's note. So Michael went and seen the doctor, and the doctor told him to stay in bed for a couple of days because he's sick as a dog, and to go back and see the doctor on Thursday to make sure he's okay. But I just saw on Michael's Facebook that says he'll be back in court on Thursday. He's a pretty tough cookie. I'm sure he'll spring back from whatever illness it is rather quickly. That's what healthy people do. They may get sick, but they get better quick. So I expect Michael to be in decent shape on Thursday. So we're going to push ahead, or attempt to push ahead. That's what happened yesterday. So we went over there today, and it's about a half hour away from us, the courthouse, and we were there about, I don't know, couldn't have been more than about 5 minutes late, and because I wanted to see what the judge was up to, and we got there, and everybody was out on the sidewalk already. And so apparently he just said, we're going ahead on Thursday. Now, this is what they like to do in the courts if you're self-represented. They'll send the disclosure to the lawyers, but if you don't have a lawyer, they won't send it to you. So what happened yesterday, like the judge says, well, the lawyer must have the disclosure. Well, yeah, but he never gave it to me. And so then the judge gets to yell at the lawyer again. There was a problem of, there was a rule put in or a notice put in that Michael, the parties couldn't speak to each other. They had to stay not closer than 500 meters together. And so, Schnur says, well, okay, now I'm self-representing apparently, and I don't have disclosure. And Robert doesn't have disclosure, and we don't have the tapes. So the judge says, well, why don't they have the tapes? So then he gets to yell at the Crown for withholding the disclosure. And they don't like you to give you the disclosure, so you can't, you go into trial and you got nothing. Trying to take advantage of the situation, the Crown over the accused. So it was rather ludicrous because I think it was after lunch anyways, where the judge says, well, make it available to them and be back here tomorrow morning at 9:30. And if Michael's here, bring a note. It's just like, it was like sitting in the principal's office. It's freaking ridiculous, right? Michael didn't get there today. Somebody brought in the notice from the doctor. And then apparently the judge issued a bench warrant for Michael because he wasn't in the court. Well, there's a doctor's note why he ain't in the court, but he issued a bench warrant so that if Michael wasn't there Thursday, it would give the police the opportunity to act on the bench warrant, which is totally ludicrous. So these gentlemen, after 17 months of being dragged in and out of court, get the disclosure less than 24 hours, way less than 24 hours, before they got to go to trial. Absolutely ridiculous. But hey, it's the legal system, or the just us system. But I saw Michael posted, now there's a lady here, Karen Selleck, who's a constitutional lawyer, and I met Karen in Guelph. We went to a raw milk symposium down there. And the media, now we know the media is only about truth. And Karen was saved her time to the end because she didn't want to be jumping up and down. She had some stuff to say, and she didn't want to say part of it now and part of it later and ask a bunch of stupid questions. So she waited to the end. Now, it was TV Ontario that was doing the piece, which is an absolute Marxist television station. And because I had a conversation with the host of the show way back when, and you know, I said, you know, Steve, it seems to me that you're partial to the untruth, not the truth, but the untruth. And got to give him kudos for that. He did get back to me. He says, you're absolutely correct. I am partial to the untruth. Their job is to manipulate, deceive, suggest, lead. Not in the right direction, that's for sure. But anyways, when Karen got up to speak after the symposium was coming to an end, and she was the last speaker, and she's a constitutional lawyer, what is TVO? They wrap up the camera. They wrap up the mics and walk away. Now, thankfully, somebody else recorded her session, but this is the kind of nonsense that goes on. This is the media for you. But anyways, I got to meet her. She worked with Michael for a couple or 3 years trying to get this dealt with. But where is that thing gone? She managed to get a piece in the Financial Post, which is a Financial Post, which is second to the National Post newspaper. And I read this to you just so you realize how ridiculous this has been. And this doesn't count the other cases, like the sheep-napping case that they attached Michael to, which after, I think it was almost 4 years of being dragged in and out of court, and of Montana, the lady who owned the sheep, who had all her sheep killed by the government, even though there was nothing wrong with the sheep. It was almost 4 years of that nonsense. So I don't know what kind of dollars were spent on that. But just on the milk thing. Now, I know her numbers are way low, but her this is a pretty good piece. So the headline is, Ontario keeps spending a fortune prosecuting a farmer who's hurt no one and keeps selling his milk. I wish everybody could meet Michael. I met him about 10 years ago. Great guy. You got to be a pretty tough guy to put up with us for 23 years. He's a very stable man. He's a very calm man. And he knows right from wrong. And that's the important part. He knows right from wrong. And he is a very moral man. And, you know, I've said this to different people, Dr. Rob, who got run over by PetSmart when he outed the problems with the over-vaccination of pets and animals in general, but mostly pets. That was his veterinary service. And he got thrown out of his office because he wasn't making enough money he was backing way off on the vaccines because he was concerned for the animals, because the more vaccines they give the animals, the more parts they were cutting off the animals. They're getting cancers. And so, you know, it's all about the money, you know. It's all about the money. And so I believe he beat his case, the Mars Bar Company, Mars Company, who bought PetSmart, came down on him like a ton of bricks, and had him hauled off to a psych ward, just trying to intimidate and beat up the little guy. But like I told Dr. Rob, you know, like you're a man of faith and crawl up on your high moral horse, because the legal system is amoral by definition. And if you're really truly a moral man, you will beat these guys. He went at him and stood his ground, just like Michael has for 23 years. And that's what we got to do. Everybody's got to do this. But anyways, the story goes in the paper here, Ontario is planning to waste more money this week prosecuting raw milk advocate Michael Schmidt. For 23 years, the province and some of its municipalities have waged war, and it is a war, against Schmidt and Glen Colton Farm, where he and others produce the unpasteurized milk that buyers want. Officials have repeatedly raided the farm, seized equipment, dragged Smith and others into court, fined him, spied on him, and otherwise attempted to intimidate him. This week, a five-day trial is occurring for Smith and two others for allegedly obstructing a peace officer on October the 2nd, 2015, that day when authorities attempted to execute yet another raid on the farm, approximately 50 people, but I was there later in the afternoon. There was definitely more than 50 people there. Co-owners of the farm cooperative gathered to oppose police in part by parking a tractor across the driveway, preventing the removal of equipment and cheese and milk and everything else. They brought in a cube van and loaded it up. And it was mostly the women. This is what was interesting. It was mostly the women that were particularly miffed about what was going on. This was their food. And these raiders come in and load up the truck and say, we're leaving with it. And the women were very staunch. They just, you ain't going anywhere with our food, right? And eventually they came to an agreement, and the police and the ministry people unloaded the truck, and then the tractor was moved, and they left. So there really was no obstruction there. But anyways, still other legal action is pending against Schmidt and other members of his co-op, an injunction application seeking once again to shut down the raw dairy operation. 2 days are scheduled for that hearing at the end of May. Now, you can imagine how this has disrupted everyone's family life and their work life. They've never nailed Michael down to anything. And they've cost everybody a ton of angst, a ton of money, a ton of time wasted. But the Crown doesn't care about that because, well, you're paying for the Crown and the courts to beat up on Michael. You're paying the bill. So how much money has Ontario spent going after this raw milk co-op for 23 years? It has all been to no avail. The farm continues to produce fresh, unpasteurized milk daily, and co-op members continue to consume raw dairy products knowingly, happily, and eagerly. It's time for Ontario to do a cost-benefit analysis on these prosecutions. It's not really a prosecution, it's more like a persecution. How much money, has the province spent on courts and cops going after this raw milk operation for these 23 years? And what has it got to show for it? So she's given full disclosure here. She was from 2010 to 2013. Karen was Schmidt's lawyer. She goes on to say, I remain his friend. A few years ago, I tried to unearth via Freedom of Information request how much the various governments had spent on legal fees. One municipality admitted having spent $138,000 on outside lawyers. The province itself, which used in-house lawyers and plenty of them to prosecute Schmidt, claimed it couldn't tell me what the cost has been. Supposedly because the lawyers didn't keep time dockets on criminal or regulatory cases where they never expected to receive court costs. Sounds fishy, says Karen. But I wouldn't waste my own scarce resources challenging it. The truth is, they probably don't know. It's highly unlikely that anyone in the Ontario government has ever attempted to tease out and compile the necessary information. from the Minister of Natural Resources, the Constitutional Law Branch of the Attorney General's Office, the Ontario Court of Justice, the Supreme Court, the Ontario Court of Appeal, the Supreme Court of Canada, the Ontario Provincial Police, four separate municipalities, and sundry other bureaucracies. Each agency itself probably has no idea what amount it has spent prosecuting Schmidt, because that's not how they organize their financial records. And what do they care anyways? Because you're paying for it all. My guess, however, having observed firsthand the many lawyers, judges, tribunals, court reporters, court clerks, expert witnesses, police officers, and civil servants involved during my years on the case, and extrapolating them from there, it is that the province costs have got to be well over $2 million by now. And the main thing that's achieved is giving Michael Schmidt extra publicity. With news of every prosecution, more and more people wonder what's so great about unpasteurized milk and whether they should give it get some. In Europe, this is still Karen talking, in Europe, authorities have taken a different approach. Over the past decade, three major studies involving approximately 24,000 children have demonstrated that the drinking of unpasteurized milk in childhood results in a 41% lower risk of asthma, a 49% lower risk of hay fever, and a 30% lower risk of respiratory infections and fevers. Canadian authorities allege that drinking raw milk can be dangerous, even fatal. But so can asthma and respiratory infections. The Asthma Society of Canada estimates that 20 Canadian children and 500 adults die from asthma attacks every year. In the 25 years, no one has ever died or even gotten sick from raw milk produced by Glen Colton Farm. Ontario outlawed unpasteurized milk almost 80 years ago. The ensuing years have witnessed enormous advances in food safety, science, microbial testing, hygiene, refrigeration, transportation, all of which make raw milk much safer than it was in 1939. I'm not ordinarily one to advocate government regulation, but legalizing raw milk would allow the money currently being squandered on police action and legal prosecutions to be spent instead ensuring that standards of food safety were being met for those consumers who insist on having raw milk. The choice is clear. And that is all that Michael Schmidt has been trying to do for 23 years. He has been trying to get raw milk regulated by the government. Now, Michael's farm is so clean, it's actually freaky how clean his farm is. When the cows aren't in the barn, you don't know there was ever any cows in damn thing. I mean, it's that clean. And because he knows that raw milk it has to be handled in a certain fashion. And so did the people way long time ago know. And it's a responsibility. I mean, it's just responsibility. So he's been after them for all this time to set up a regulatory board with inspectors, because one of his fears is that, you know, he knows his operation. He's been doing it forever. But if they just open the gates, then anybody can get in start moving raw milk around. I mean, raw milk's being moved around all the time everywhere by all kinds of farms, but Michael's out in front here. Most of it's underground. It's almost like drugs or something. You know where I can get some raw milk or some raw cheese, huh? You know, I know a guy down on that, but I have to call him because he doesn't know. He will have to vet you to make sure you're not a narc or something, right? I mean, that's ridiculous. It's milk. It's food. But that's all Michael's done. He's tried to have meetings with premiers and different people in the government, and nothing ever happens. And we were at that milk symposium in Guelph. It became very clear. We already knew it, but one of the speakers spelled it out. A government speaker spelled it out. Somebody asked a question: if you could, if this was a financial plus for the government, would they legalize it? And the answer was yes, but we haven't found how to make money on raw milk yet. So therefore, it'll stay illegal. And it's always about control, and it's always about monopoly. So yeah, so all this time and all this money wasted, and a lot of lives shattered. The good old government slash corporation keeps coming, trying hopefully one day to nail Michael down on something. And all I can say is good luck with that. But you know, this is it's about responsibility and choice. And that's what got Michael in 2010 acquitted on all charges, because the judge basically said everyone has the right to make an informed choice outside of the government. This is your personal life. This is your decision, and you're an adult. So the government really got no, it can't tell you what you can eat. You know, they're going to come out next week. Pickles are out, off the market. So anyways, this is what they've been spending their money on. The police, I mean, the courtroom's full of police, full of reporters, full of government actors. It's ludicrous as well. It's sick to even watch. I mean, it's so over the top. This big cop, about 6'4", and a cop about the same height, might even be a little bit taller than me. And I was leaving the courtroom there at a break yesterday, and he's standing at the door, you know, with his arms crossed over his chest and that. And I said, "How's it going?" He said, "I'm good. How are you, Ron?" And because I've been dragged in and out of there enough times, all the police around here know who I am. I said, "You know, is this just getting more ridiculous or what?" And he kind of chuckled. He said, "It's getting bad, right? But they're getting their paychecks. You know, they do what they're told." So this is what they're told to do. They're told to persecute Michael Schmidt, spy, do whatever they can to try to find anything they can to keep dragging his ass into court. Either bankrupt his spirit or bankrupt him financially, but just keep on him. That's what the police and the courts are doing. Now, there's another story which shows the opposite side. Here's a guy who has caused nobody any harm. Okay? He just does what a farmer does. He farms. And he's trying to get good food to people, and the people want the food. And Karen was right. The more they prosecute him, but they try to make him out look like a bandit in the newspapers, and they're all, of course, fake stories or trumped up stories, and on the radio and the TV, and they try to make these milk people, you know, it was like almost like the build up to Waco, right? You know. Did these people, Waco, hurt anybody? Were they bothering anybody? No, but they wanted to make an example, and they want to make an example of Michael. So they try to make him look like a cult and anti-government, which is kind of ridiculous because Michael's been working for 23 years trying to get the government to sit down at the table so that they could regulate raw milk. But yet, they pin them as anti-government types. Why would an anti-government type be going to the government all the time trying to get things something regulated? But no, it's about persecution and prosecution. That's it. So they've caused no harm. They just want to have some milk and some cheese and organic food. And the food is just glorious. I got to tell you that. It's just so damn good. The cheeses and that, wow. But anyway, so that's a little farmer in rural Ontario. Now, let's flip the switch. We have the next problem, which is, should Toronto cops, excuse me, face illegal immigrant dilemma? I don't know why it's a dilemma. You're a cop. Pretend the illegals are Michael Schmidt and go after the illegals as hard as you will go after Michael Schmidt. Then we won't have any illegals. And you can leave Michael alone and his people, not his people, the co-op people. Toronto Police Officer Police Chief Mark Saunders will deliver a report in March detailing whether his officers will comply with federal immigration laws or Toronto Sanctuary City's policies. Under Canadian law, police are expected to contact border officials to report individuals who are here illegally. Though current practice is they, in quotes, don't ask anyone's immigration status. However, City Council wants the force to adopt a don't tell policy as well and refuse to pass along any information to immigration authorities about the individuals they find who illegally entered Canada. Now, I talked to the Ministry of Corrections and Safety, of which the police are under. But again, the police are an arm's length organization, but they are under the umbrella of the Ministry of Corrections and Safety. And when I was talking to them, I don't know what it was, 6 months, a year ago, whenever. About some other things, and I was asking who the hell polices the police, and he said, "Well, really nobody. Well, the police, because they're arm's length. They're an arm's length corporate body, legislated, and to do the duties which in the act. But nobody. This is what the ministry's telling me. Nobody can tell the police what to do, and if no one has the authority." And if an official tells the police what to do, that's breaking the law because they can't do that. The police are there to investigate crime as per the Police Act and the different legislations and all this kind of stuff. So now we have the councils telling the police what to do. Now, that policy, it says, will clearly put Saunders, the police chief, and his officers in an awkward position. Well, not really. You should be arresting the Council of Toronto for even suggesting that they turn a blind eye. But they don't say that. They say, geez, it's going to be awkward for the police chief. According to the Canadian Border Services Agency, policy or police are obliged to report immigration violations to them, regardless of city policies. So the CBSA, which is the Canadian Border Services, works with law enforcement agencies to uphold and enforce Canadian law. CBSA spokesman Lynn Gluper-Wolf said in an email, these partnerships are crucial in ensuring the safety and security of our country and citizens. Whoa. So these immigration partnerships are crucial, she says, to, I think it's a she, it's LINE. I don't know if that's a guy or a girl. I'm going to go with a girl, but whatever, doesn't matter. It could be a turtle tomorrow, depends how she self-identifies or he self-identifies. But anyways, it says very specifically, these partnerships are crucial to ensuring the safety and security of our country and its citizens. And here we have the councils city councils in Toronto, Hamilton, London, Montreal, Ottawa, Vancouver, Calgary, all the major cities in the country are now rapidly proclaiming themselves sanctuary cities. And by doing so, they are what? They are undermining the safety and security of our country and citizens, according to immigration, which is against the law. This is how far down the hole we're going here. I mean, this is getting so bad. The Toronto Sun specifically asked if police officers are expected to report to the immigration when they come in contact with a person through work, even a victim of crime who is in the country illegally. Now, immigration says, in the course of the regular duties, a law enforcement officer has the authority to arrest and detain that individual and present this person to immigration. Partners refer cases to immigration for reasons including outstanding warrants, criminality, overstays, to verify identity, and for working without authorization. Now, the Toronto police have had a don't ask witnesses and victims policy since 2006, but immigrant and refugee advocates, no one is illegal, reported extensive collaboration between officers and border officials and launched a campaign to stop Toronto police from doing immigration enforcement dirty work. Saunders was asked by council a year ago to report back on expanding the don't ask, don't tell philosophy deeper into the service after complaints that undocumented individuals were afraid to access police services for fear they would be turned over to immigration officials and deported. I mean, is this out of a bad movie or what? I mean, if you put what's been going on to Michael Schmidt for 23 years, caused nobody any harm, hasn't put anybody at risk, hasn't undermined the country, hasn't put the safety of the citizens at risk, compared to what's going on here with this immigration nonsense. Police spokesman Mark Pugash said Saunders will respond to council's request at the March meeting of the Police Services Board. Toronto became the country's first sanctuary city in 2013 and reaffirmed that decision in a vote a few weeks ago, adopting to official policy of providing public services to all residents, regardless if they're of their status. I mean, regardless if they're here legally or illegally, it makes no difference. So the whole idea of living in a country, you know, is you're a citizen of the country, you have certain rights, and where the illegals don't have those same rights. But that's all changing rapidly. And this is all through UN. The good old United Nations who wish to be the king. And everybody will be under their control. And that's exactly what they're doing. The sanctuary cities came out of the UN. The mass migration came out of the UN. The don't ask thing came out of the UN. This all came out of the UN. And it's all about the death of nation states. So now we got your city councilors and your police involved in destroying your nation from the inside. And the newspapers are discussing it. It doesn't say, you know, arrest any cop or any council member that is aiding or abetting illegal immigrants, either entering into the country or already here. No, this is how the UN writes stuff. And these reporters are all UN reporters. Now, they may work for the different papers, but they're still schooled in the art of the UN lingo. which is about giving scenarios, not the fact that this is black and white against the law, but scenarios on how we can get to our goal, which is to destroy your nation state by using mass immigration and mostly Islamic immigration to take down the sanctity of what our country was built upon, which was on the Christian faith. And these two cannot mix. This is oil and water, man. You cannot mix Islam and Christianity. So they made the void, and they took the Christian prayers and everything to do with what our forefathers built this country on was Christian law, not corporate law, which we've been under forever. And Islamic law, Sharia, and Christian law cannot work together. It's an impossibility, absolute impossibility. I mean, the Islamics call us infidels. And if we don't change to Islam, then they have the right to kill us. And this is who the cities and the councils and the police are protecting. Basically, it is kind of a don't ask, don't tell set of policies, said the Sanctuary City Initiative. So you don't ask if someone comes to a homeless shelter or someone comes to our park and recreation for a library card. You don't ask their status in Canada, and you don't provide the services, but you do provide the services that they need. And you also don't tell border authorities if you find out. This is pretty ludicrous, because I live where I live, and I was looking for a particular book, and I'm in a small town with a small library, so they phoned around and said, they think the book is in an old sandwich about an hour from here. So I went there, and yeah, they have the book, and I want to take the book out. Okay, so they say, do you have a library card? I said, yes, I do. And I pulled the library card out. And they go, well, we won't be able to give you the book. I go, why? Well, you're not in our jurisdiction. This is a stupid library book. I mean, what are you talking about? Well, we're in Gray and you're in Bruce counties. And? Well, the best thing we can do is if you go back to your library and put in a request to your library, to our library, then we will ship the book down to your library. That'd probably take 3 weeks or so. I go, what are you, an idiot? I'm standing right here. I got the book in my hand. There's a library card. Yes, but it doesn't hold water here. Now, we had a big hoo-ha there, and it took a while, and I had to threaten to call the mayor, and I offered to buy the book for $100. And then if I don't bring it back, well, the book's worth about $25, so you got three free books. But they can't do that either. But eventually, after I threatened to phone the mayor, they said, well, why don't you just take the book then? And I go, why was this such a problem? Well, we're bound by jurisdiction in that. But apparently, if I'm an illegal, you see, I can go to any library and say, I want this book. Do you have a library card? No. Do you have any identification? No. Where are you from? None of your business. You seem like a foreigner. Yep, just got off the boat yesterday, but I ain't giving you no information because I'm in a sanctuary city, so give me the book. And they have to hand the book over. And that's all part of the universal human rights through the UN. Everyone has a right to. So our countries are it's not just about Canada. I don't care where you live in the world. Your country's being taken down by the very people that are supposed to protect you. The police have historically said, we are okay with the don't ask part, but we are legally obligated to the tell part. But no one is illegal. This NGO has come forward with a legal opinion that suggests The don't tell part is an option for police, not a mandate, he said. It was also said he would still expect police to report undocumented residents who appear to be complicit in crime. Well, the legal men and women here are complicit in crime. The city is complicit in crime. The police are complicit in crime. The federal government is complicit in crime because it's the federal government that's a member state of the United Nations. And it's their policies that they're implementing. But they really can't bring them through. See, if they bring them through the front door, then everybody's going to say, what the hell are you doing? So now we're going to bring them in through the back door. And then we'll play these little word games. So everybody from the prime minister all the way down through every bureaucracy that would support or have anything to do with these illegals has broken the law. But they're trying to make excuses for it. It says, for but example, a woman who is being abused and calls police, who would then ask being risk being turned over to immigration authorities if the abuser tells officers she's undocumented, he said. So, see, we have to protect that. Are the police obligated to tell the Canadian Border Services in that case? Well, that's the kind of situation we're trying to avoid. We think it would be, frankly, at the end of the day, a safer Toronto to have undocumented residents feel comfortable reporting illegal activity. But they are the illegal activity. So the illegals would feel more comfortable reporting illegal activity. I mean, do people actually read this and say, oh, well, it sounds good to me? According to city staff report from 2015, there are already anywhere between 20 and 500,000 undocumented people living in Canada, and the best guess is about half of them live in Toronto. Those numbers will undoubtedly swell with warmer weather and expectations that thousands upon thousands of asylum seekers in the U.S. will cross the Canadian border to escape possible deportation under U.S. President the evil one, Donald Trump, vowed to enforce American immigration laws and target violent criminals for deportation. So they're going to end up here. Hundreds have already begun to cross the border in remote locations, especially in Manitoba and Quebec, avoiding border checkpoints to skirt the safe third country agreement that would require them to seek refugee status in the U.S. Where they sought protection. What does John Mayer Tory say? Well, he's a lawyer, so it won't be very interesting what he has to say, because this is all based on international law. In other words, your law don't matter no more, folks. I don't care what country, and if your country's a member state of the United Nations, they have trumped your so-called laws in your state. I mean, there's still corporate legal laws, but it's still, at least it's being administrated by people in your own country. This is outside crap. So what does Mayor John Tory have to say? Toronto will be asking the Justin Trudeau government to move for more help to settle refugees, Tory says. The Toronto Sun asked the mayor this week about the arrival of refugees fleeing the United States and about the Toronto Police Service's don't ask, don't tell policies for undisclosed residents. Toronto, says Tory, is a sanctuary city and a popular landing spot for refugees. What you are seeing is people flee Donald Trump immigration policies. So this whole thing, and it's not about Donald Trump, it's about the UN agreements that the countries are attached to, which go back to 1951, but the main one, 1954. And they've entrapped all the countries after that through the universal human rights. So Tory, who's a lawyer, says that Toronto is a sanctuary city, which of course is illegal, and a popular landing spot for refugees, which are illegal. What you're seeing is people flee President Donald Trump's immigration policies. In other words, attempting to uphold the immigration laws in America, he's the bad guy. And the reason that we need sanctuary cities here in Canada is because of Donald Trump, his immigration policies. Well, he's attempting to bring back his immigration policies back to being immigration policies. That if you're not supposed to be here, goodbye. If you want to try and come in here, fill out the proper forms, come through the front door, and if you're vetted and you're clean and we want you, you can stay. Piece of cake. Where on the other hand, our policy now, which was Obama's policy, but it's all UN policy, our police here will help you across the border. But you're helping illegal. We have no choice. It's because Donald Trump. That's no excuse. But that's what they're doing. It's like children. And I hear people say, well, we got to do something. Look what Trump's doing. Well, Trump ain't doing nothing except trying to get the immigration law working again. It goes on, city staff are telling us it's too early to say what, if any, impact there has been on services stemming from American foreign policy changes. However, as any good order of government, we are monitoring our services and our shelters in order to understand what service levels we're meeting and what the future need will be. So what he's saying is that we are absolutely fully accepting of illegals. The problem with the illegals is, where are they going to live? Well, we'll buy them housing. What are they going to eat? We'll buy them the food. What are they going to work at? Doesn't matter. They get social services. What about their health? Well, they'll get free health. What about education? Free. But you'll have to hire more teachers, more doctors. Well, yeah. Well, who's paying for that? Well, the people already here. Why? Well, because we have to help the refugees. But you're tearing our cities down and our country down in the process. Well, yeah, but we're hooked up with the UN, so we just do what they tell us to do. And we lie to you all the time because, well, you wouldn't put up with what the UN wants us to do. So we have to do this wiggly wart scenario crap. So the question is, will this put a strain on city services? And if so, what kind of help do you hope for from the federal government or other levels of government? So this is still John Tory, mayor of Toronto. He goes on to say, we are working with the federal government to ensure that refugees coming to Canada have all the services they require to succeed. Now, I'm sure the underprivileged in this country would love to hear those words directed at them. You know, those who have fallen through the cracks, the veterans. I mean, I did read a story or saw a story, not that got off along, but a veteran that lost their house waiting for their veteran money. But the government didn't rush to that individual's aid and ended up out in the street. Those are vets. But if you're here and you're not supposed to be here, Canada will have all the services they require to succeed. Unfortunately, the federal government ends funding for government-sponsored refugees after 1 year, at which point the municipalities are filling in for the feds. So municipalities everywhere, it's every village, town, city. So if you live in a village, town, or city in Canada, then you will be picking up after 1 year the tab for the living costs of this so-called refugee. And you may say, well, I already got my back to the wall. I'm working like my head off just to keep a roof and food on the table. Well, work harder. Because you're going to have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of these so-called refugees when they're really manufactured foot soldiers of the army coming to attempt to take down our nation. But, you know, we got to give them what they want. So after 1 year, at which point the municipalities are filling in for the feds, that means that you're paying the bill now. Does more need to be done following the first year? Absolutely, says the government. I'll be asking the federal, this Tory, I guess, still, I'll be asking the federal government to do more. The feds do provide some funding for the shelter system, and providing assistance to refugees in our shelter system should certainly be supported by the federal government. Now, why would the federal government be supplying funding to a city that's breaking the law? It all has to do with that thing from the UN. Last February, you voted against asking the police chief to report back on the expansion of the don't ask, don't tell policy to police officers who come across people with outstanding immigration orders. Why? Well, it's important for our police to be able to communicate with everyone in the city on this issue. More work needs to be done between the city of Toronto and the Toronto Police. At the Toronto Police Services Board, we forwarded the report to the chief and asked him to look at these recommendations. He's currently working with city staff. So it's really sick that, you know, one I think the most sick, pathetic parts of all of this is that we pay the politicians' salaries and pensions. We pay for all their office equipment. We pay for all their staff. We pay for all the police cars. We pay for their uniforms. We pay for their pensions, and so on and so forth. Not only are we paying for them, now we're going to pay for the housing, food, clothing, education, health, library cards, and every other damn thing for these people who are not supposed to be here. It's time people face some realities. The enemy is inside the gates. It's as close as your town or city hall. And I can't stress enough of the need to become involved. You know, either you're going to affect politics or it's going to affect you. And we got to get this thing sorted out. And these people do need to be arrested. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I'll put that one about the cops. And I'm going to put this story in from Karen Selleck, who is a constitutional lawyer. Now, me and Karen have had a couple chats, and we have a bit of disagreement, you know, that this whole legal system in itself is a fraud. And needs to be dealt with. But other than that, she's a pretty damn nice lady, and you know, she's doing her best under the circumstances, which is being a lawyer, to help Michael through the pitfalls and stuff and try to find resolution for what he's facing. So we're going to go back to court on Thursday morning, and Thursday night I'll give you an update on whether they got rid of the judge or the judge is going ahead. So I hear music, so that's it for the show tonight. Read this stuff I put in the chat, and everybody take care. And go to the talk to you every day, all day. Make it. Fuck them back, it's only for the more.